The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
And welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. My name's Kay Murray, joined in the studio by Shaka Hislop, and we are still unpacking what we saw in that big game in the Premier League between Man City and Liverpool that finished in a 2-2 draw. Joining us to do so, we have Julien Laurent, Frank Leboeuf, and Ian Dark as well. Let's get started then, shall we? Because Jules was actually pitch side for this game at the Etihad. And Jules, you've been pitch side for many a game over the years. How did this one compare?
Yeah, I mean, it was great. Certainly the game of the season, even better, I thought, than the reverse fixture at Anfield at the start, towards the start of the season, I think back in October. It was, the intensity was great. The tactical setup from Guardiola, I think he got it really spot on with the 4-2-4 formation and the positioning of Bernardo Silva and the fight that they tried to hit. The behind the high line of the Liverpool defence, and especially on Alexander on all sides. So I thought that was great. I love the resilience from Liverpool and the fact that they came back twice into the game. This season in the Premier League, every time City opened the scoring, they never even drew or lost. They always won. Every single game, every single time they opened the scoring, they won. And for Liverpool to go to the Etihad and get 2 points, and of course, I think City deserved to win in the end, but that showed a lot of mental strength from Liverpool.
Ian, have you ever seen two teams this good, so committed to going forward?
Yeah, I mean, it's tremendous entertainment. The first game, the 2-2 draw at Anfield, was a good game. And I agree with Jules there that this one was probably a touch better than that as well. I mean, both sides really look like scoring with almost every attack. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about, is this, you know, are these the two best Premier League teams ever? Well, certainly from an attacking point of view, they are. Defensively, not quite so sure, really, because Liverpool do play that high line. I think they adapted slightly in the second half because always Trent Alexander-Arnold and Robertson are pushing so far forward that there's space in behind them. And Manchester City were exploiting that space and probably should have had the game wrapped up by halftime. They didn't. And Liverpool, well, if you give them an even break, they'll take it.
Who stood out to you, Shaka, in the game?
Oh, geez, where do you start? In all honesty, listen, it's hard to pick out individuals in this one, especially given the two teams and how they play. I thought it was a fantastic game of football. Oftentimes, when we look at these big games, they don't live up to billing. But this was everything. And to Drew's point around the meeting at Anfield between these two earlier this season. There's just so much more at stake. Given the run that both of them are on, how tight it is at the gap, less games between now and the end of the season, no real room for any error. But for the second time running, you saw Klopp adjust it at half-time and Liverpool be better in the second half and then maybe get their just rewards. These are two of the best footballing teams in Europe right now, going head-to-head in this manner. In the way that as I said, didn't disappoint. This was a game of football for all to enjoy, regardless of who you support.
Frank, what did you take away from this clash?
Well, the fantastic intensity of the game, the will of the two teams to go to go forward, to not maybe calculate too much, and I really enjoyed, you know, watching it. That was real entertainment. Well, as a former defender, and I'm sure Shaka would join me as a former goalkeeper, we don't want to go into details in the defending situations that both teams went into at some point. But overall, I enjoyed the game. I enjoyed the battles. I enjoyed also the end of the game when I saw Klopp and Guardiola, almost kissing each other because the fight is still on. The game is still on. We don't know who's going to win the Premier League. It's very exciting. And to see those two teams playing the way they played, it's enjoying. We just had a very good time watching two fantastic teams.
Yeah, so it's a point apiece. It means that Man City are still 1 point ahead of Liverpool. But Ian, after the game, Pep Guardiola said he feels as though it was an opportunity missed not coming away with the victory. Would you agree with him?
Yeah, probably. I mean, if you look back on the first half, the number of chances Manchester City had to put the game to bed, but they didn't take those chances. Liverpool got away with that and adapted in the second half and were worth the point, I thought, at the end of the game. Tremendous ball, wasn't it, by Salah for Mane for that second goal. But it was one of many. You know, and you can pick out things that happened in the game. It was a surprise selection, Gabriel Jesus by Pep, but that came off, didn't it, as well? I think you saw Kevin De Bruyne as well, right back to his very best. Now, I think he's put all those injury problems and he had last summer well behind him. Now, what a ball at the end of the game to release Mahrez. Fantastic ball, and they probably should have taken that chance to win it, but they didn't. And we'll find out when the final maths are done at the end of the season how costly that might or might not be.
Of course we will. Jules, you've talked extensively about this today on the Gab and Jules podcast. I just asked Xhaka who stood out. Who for you underperformed on the day?
I mean, and you know, because I've expressed it before, I'm not the biggest fan of Jordan Henderson. I think this is a game with all the quality that we mentioned already and the intensity. I mean, he can run, of course, that he can do. For the rest, I don't think technically, for example, he's good enough for this kind of game. Even Thiago Alcantara, who's way better technically than Jordan Henderson, at times struggled because the game was going so quick, because City have players who play between the lines so well that it's so hard, one, to pick them up, and then two, when you recover the ball, to use it well, because then they counter-press straight away. For me, that was a problem on the Liverpool side of things, and I think even in the way they pressed and the way Henderson pressed, I don't think he always helped the team. There were some mistakes made, some mistakes that I know there's always mistakes in a game, nothing is perfect, but some mistakes that I didn't really expect players like Fabinho or Walker to make. The Fabinho one on the first goal, I'm sorry, with 5 minutes in, you cannot turn your back to the ball after you conceded a free kick, by the way. And you can't switch off like that, like he did. Walker, with 46 seconds after the break, you can't be half asleep when you've just started the second half and give a yard to Mane, because you know that Salah can pick that pass and that Mane will finish. For me, those mistakes at that kind of level are still a bit surprising, but of course, when you play against such an amazing team both ways, you're going to make mistakes. Maybe even Trent on the Gabriel Jesus goal as well, and the way his marking is maybe a little bit loose. But yeah, there was not many that didn't really perform well, to be fair.
Frank?
Well, I would agree with Jules about Anderson, that he didn't have a fantastic game, even if I think he did what they had to do. But I think I was mostly disappointed by one of the players that I cheer the most is Van Dijk. I think he was quite fragile, especially the first half, and he wasn't the Van Dijk that we all know. But we have to talk about Trent Alexander-Arnold. That guy, offensively, is one of the best player in the world in terms of giving the best ball that I never seen in my life. But defensively, oh my God, you know, how many times on his back, he doesn't even look at it. He's like a little kid, just looking at the ball, never taking care of what's going on his back, which is absolutely the essence of what a defender has to do. In the first half, he didn't do it. In the second half, he was on the left side and they conceded the goal with the second goal that City scored. And he was marking the guy and it's like he doesn't care. And I can't understand that, because he's a tremendous player offensively, and there's only one thing to think about. Just look a little bit what's going on on your side and on your back, and maybe you're gonna be a better defender. I love him, really. I love him. He's a fantastic player, but at that level, he's causing some problems and trouble. I'm sure Klopp is working with him about that, but it's clearly not enough because he has to do better.
Do you agree, Xhaka, or is that a risk that you have to take with a player like Trent Alexander-Arnold?
No, I agree with all criticism, but at the same time, I think it represents how highly we've set a bar for these players. And these are criticisms While Jules is criticising Kyle Walker, for instance, for being out of position once. There was once in the first half where there was a ball in behind and he came from right back, came all the way across the park and intercepted that pass. And intercepted and broke up a player. I can't remember exactly who it was. But that's Kyle Walker and with Salah. And that's how good he is. So then when you see him get exposed by as good a pass as it was, as good a run as it was by Sadio Mane, all of a sudden that stands out because you realise how good a right back he is and how difficult it is to catch him out of position because he's so quick. We know that Trent Alexander-Arnold isn't great defensively. Seeing that, he's been a whole lot better lately. He's always been good going forward, but then he gets exposed. And you see it. And it's... The marking, I think the criticism, again, kind of recognises how good the opponent is. There aren't many teams in world football, never mind just the Premier League, who will catch Kyle Walker out of position. There aren't many teams in world football who will expose Trent Alexander-Arnold as often as City did. So while you criticise and Van Dijk, and I agree with Frank, but we're talking about Van Dijk. That performance was good for 99% of centre-backs in world football at the highest level. But all of a sudden you see him now and you just think it's not looking like what we expect of him. So while the criticism is real and it's valid, I think you have to recognise it for who it is and how good both these teams are at exposing the smallest of opportunities.
Yeah, Ian, what's your thoughts on it?
I was just thinking, as Shaka was talking there, about I wonder what the situation would have been in that game if Manchester City had Elfinger Haaland. Not Alfie Haaland, of course, Erling Haaland. They're likely to get him next season. He surely would have put a couple of those chances in the first half into the back of the net. And I thought they maybe just suffered from that. You saw Sterling as well, didn't you, have that chance in the first half and Alisson makes the save from him, and the identical chance that Mane had, he puts it in the back of the net. So, you know, I think Liverpool are that little bit more ruthless in attack.
So 1 point between the two after that 2-2 draw, as mentioned, and now 7 games left. Many saying that Liverpool have the harder run in. I think it's a unanimously thought there. But are there some dropped points still to go from both sides? What's your pick here, Jules, on what you see? Who's going to go all the way into this?
As much as I would love them both. Yeah, I mean, I would love them to go 7 out of 7. You know, both of them. I would love another Premier League season with a 1 point in between them two, like the 98, 97 points of 2 years ago. I don't think both can do it. I think maybe one of them two, but I think some points will be dropped. We've seen City at times against the smaller team, against the really, really low block, against really aggressive teams, like at Crystal Palace the other day with a 0-0 draw, for example, where they struggled to break them down. They created the chances sometimes and the finish was the problem, or sometimes didn't create enough. And that was also an issue. I mean, I know I said it all the time, but 4 games in the Premier League this season where they didn't score a single goal. Liverpool only won, for example. So I think maybe that could be a problem for City. On paper, they've got an easier run of fixture, of course, because Liverpool still have the Liverpool derby. They have to play United. They will have to play Spurs, albeit that's at home. But still, you know, Spurs' form at the moment is incredible. So that's not a given. I think they both have Aston Villa. There's West Ham as well for West Ham away and Wolves away for City too. So they're not easy games. I don't think both of them will do 7 out of 7. I think some points will be dropped. I said Liverpool will win, so I have to stick with Liverpool. Although right now you would rather be in the City position than in the Liverpool position.
Jules going for Liverpool here. Frank, what about you?
Well, it's going to be... it depends first on the odds, what's going to happen on Saturday and the FA Cup semi-final first. Then what's going to happen in the Champions League for both of the teams. And... you know what? Because sometimes you have to go into details and believe in your destiny, the last game of Manchester City is against Aston Villa. The coach of Aston Villa is Steven G. And so you never know what can happen. And because it's always in the last breath of the Premier League that we have, you know, a decision, I would say that I would go with Liverpool at the last game because Aston Villa is going to win against Manchester City.
little bit of cheeky foul play there? Suggestions by Frank, was that Xhaka?
Oh, I am not leaning into what Frank said, whatever it is he was suggesting there. Listen, City are in poor position, obviously, by just a point. And to Jules's point, City have dropped points this year against Southampton, Crystal Palace, who played in that low block. They've lost at home to Tottenham Hotspur, who I don't think anybody in the rest of City's games have that pace up front to expose City on the counter-attack. As hard as it is, I just feel that City somehow hang on and get it done. And that taking nothing away from Liverpool's run, the run that they've been on. They haven't dropped points at all in the league since early January. So I just feel that if there's anybody who's going to drop points, maybe it's Liverpool. So I'm leaning City, but only just.
Ian?
Well, you have to say it's advantage Manchester City. They're a point clear. They're well capable, looking at that fixture list, of winning all seven, I'd say, from here on in. Liverpool do have the slightly tougher run in, as Jules was saying. I mean, Spurs at home, you know, Tottenham look a different proposition, don't they, these days? A Merseyside derby, you saw Everton fight like tigers at the weekend, so those aren't going to be easy games. Having said that, Liverpool have won 10 of their last 11. City have dropped a few points, so it is the toss of a coin, but at this stage, you'd have to say a slight advantage, Manchester City.
Well, there is a lot more talk about this game on the latest Gavin Jules podcast. They are joined by Mark Ogden. Make sure to download that wherever you get your podcasts.
Stadium that has seen so much football history written. There's plenty more to come.
History made by Manchester City.
The FA Cup is back in Liverpool hands.
Salah, too good.
It's Diogo Jota once again. Grealish beautifully taken down.
Foden!
A showdown of potentially epic proportions.
Man City Liverpool coming up on Saturday. Once again, this time there has to be a winner. It's the FA Cup semi-finals. And wow, we can't wait for this game. 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Plus with all the build-up. Craig Stevie and Frank Leboeuf will be joining me to bring you everything you need to know ahead of this game, which will be live, as said, on ESPN+. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply. We turn our attention to the other team in Manchester now, who also faced opponents from Merseyside over the weekend, losing 1-0 to Everton, which was damaging in their bid to finish in the top four, which does seem to be slipping away from them in recent games. And you have to wonder, Ian, how a team that finished second last season and added Cristiano Ronaldo, Jadon Sancho and Rafael Varane find themselves in this position.
Well, it's a mess at Manchester City. I mean, it's not the first time that we've said it. There's so much wrong there. I think it's pretty well known by now. The story's got out that the dressing room is a bit on the toxic side. There are divisions in there. And I think when they get in a corner, they can't fight their way out of that corner. And that's one of the reasons, I think, that they don't have that kind of band of brothers thing going on. And, you know, they had the chances early on against Everton, but in the end they were outfought by Everton. Everton wanted it more than Manchester United, and you know what? We've said that a few times about United, and I think, frankly, you know, you heard the interview Luke Shaw did when he was with England, more or less admitting that it was not a pleasant place to be around. I think those players can't wait for the season to end. I don't see them finishing in the top four, and I wouldn't imagine very many others do either.
Are there overrated players, Frank, in this Manchester United side? We just mentioned some of the players that were brought in, Cristiano Ronaldo, Jadon Sancho, Rafael Varane. And if so, who?
I wouldn't say overrated players. I think not very well used players. And I would say that the combination of all the players doesn't match. That's what it is. That's the problem with all the recruitment that we've seen for, I would say, a decade with Manchester United, where you made the choice of paying or launching big money to maybe having a fantastic team, where the essence of Manchester United doesn't come from there. You're losing the basics of the club, where it's always been players from the academy who created the history of the club. There you see names, but you see big names, you see lots of money spent, like maybe never, for a result, a catastrophe, I would say. Yes, you have fantastic players, and I would say that they are fantastic players, but they don't match, they don't want to play together. They don't have somebody who can lead them on the pitch and just outside of the pitch. It's a big mess. I don't know what to say anymore about that team. I think we have to leave them alone, deal with the mess, and see within a year or two what's going on over there.
But Jules, managers change, but the performances don't seem to change. Do you think that in hindsight, going for Ralf Rangnick wasn't the correct decision when there was a manager like Antonio Conte available?
Yeah, I think we can say now that hasn't worked out, really. I mean, we can just look at the win percentage, which is even lower than Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I think he's the lowest since even before Sir Alex Ferguson or something crazy like that. This is probably the worst United team that we've seen since the 70s. And I was not even born in the 70s, but certainly from if you look down the years, this is the worst. And it's a shambles from top to bottom, structurally, at the football club, which is maybe the worst. The most worrying is that the whole structure is wrong. The team is a shambles, of course. The academy is a shambles. The signing, the recruitment, even the recruitment in the youth team is a shambles. So there's just nothing right. Right now, it will take them, I think, a very long time. And you mentioned the second place from last season, Kay. I think they overachieved. And that was hiding all the mess anyway. But I don't even know where to start in terms of what could they do to be better next season. They need to get rid of so many of those players in the squad, to get so many different players, and obviously start with the manager and then get his idea and his identity. And you can't get it wrong this time, because you clearly got it wrong with Rangnick, the whole idea of an interim coach. He was there for 6 months, but not really there. And maybe after he's a consultant, but he's not really a consultant. And we've said from day one, a club like Manchester United, one of the greatest clubs in the world, cannot have an interim manager for 6 months. It just doesn't work like that. Go and get someone that you appoint, the right guy, for a normal contract, not just for 6 months. Rangnick never got the players' approval in a way, never got the authority that he deserved or that he should have had as a Manchester United manager. And from there, from day one, the whole thing was going to be wrong anyway.
But Jules, you mentioned players that they need to get rid of. Who would you be referring to?
Good luck. Three quarters of the squad. I mean, there's the ones who are going to leave because they're off contract anyway, like Paul Pogba, like many others. What do you do with Marcus Rashford? He wants a new deal. I was told, wants quite a lot of money in wages. Right now, you can't keep Marcus Rashford on his terms. It doesn't work like this. What do you do with Cristiano? I think Cristiano is the biggest question mark. Whoever comes as a manager will have to decide, do we keep him? But you keep him and you play him? Can he fit any identity that a new manager like Ten Hag or Pochettino wants to implement in that football team? I'm not sure. Do you get rid of him? How do you get rid of him on the money that he's on with one more year left on his contract? Who's going to take him at his age? So this you just start with the biggest one. And then what do you do with players like Matic? What do you do with Maguire? What do you do with Lindelof? You still have everybody. You're still paying Phil Jones. Phil Jones right now is being paid $150,000 a week by Manchester United. How is that even possible? So all of that has to go. And then you bring on the players that your manager wants, the players that he will fit in his philosophy, in his system, in his tactics. And if that means it's not a big name, but it's someone who runs a lot, who presses well, who's intelligent, go and get him. If he wants a big name, go and get him. But stop wasting your money that you've done for so many years.
Easy peasy, hey, Frank. Not a lot to do at Manchester United.
Well, that's the main problem. And Jules pointed what they should do. So it's really getting rid of most players, but they're under contract. But again, you have to leave them alone, I think. Deal with their own mess because it's what they created. Maybe get rid of all the people in the board and people who made those decisions and restart from scratch. Because it's going to take ages to get rid of the players, to restart something, rebuild the academy, rebuild the first team, rebuild the board. I mean, they destroyed one of the biggest clubs in the world, if it's not the biggest club in the world. Can you imagine that? It's a big, big mess. Arsenal almost went into it after Wenger left. I saw Marseille a little bit like that. What's going to happen to Paris Saint-Germain soon? Barcelona almost went into that, and they seem to survive. There are big clubs who've been under question marks, but that one, when we see the players, when we see the status of the club, but when we see what's going on in and just out of Old Trafford, it's a nightmare. It's really a nightmare, and I feel sad for the fans, really.
Casual little drop in of Marseille there by Frank. Shaka, could you ever have foreseen this in your days in the Premier League, that this is what would happen to Manchester United?
No, not at all. I think a real discussion around Manchester United is if they're going to do as Liverpool did and go some 30 years before you can see them realistically in a title race again. And as much as Manchester United fans might not want to hear that, refuse to think that, it's an absolute truth for them. And the other truth to that is it's of their own making. Listen, between Jules and Frank, they touched on all the issues around Manchester United, around the academy, around the playing squad and what needs to be restructured. But the football club is being run as poorly as any club, let alone we're talking about one of the biggest clubs in world football. What football club, what big football club is afraid of a manager because he's too outspoken? What big football club in today's game does not go after the most highly decorated coach that is available because he has a little bit too much to say for himself? And you allow Antonio Conte to walk away, and you bring in Ralph Rangnick instead. You're creating your own problems. And to your question, Kate, now I'm really wondering if that second place finish jaded Manchester United in terms of their own assessment of where they are. Because the truth is, they finished second last season, and over the course of 38 games, you have to say you deserve that. But City won the league. That's normal and to be expected. Chelsea changed their manager halfway through the season. I don't think any other big club was more affected by COVID than Liverpool. So now all of a sudden you finish second and you think we're in a good place, and you hiding from your own truth. And now you know that has come home to roost. And I honestly do not know how or when Manchester United get themselves out of this absolute mess.
Ian, you get the final thought on this.
Just a couple of things, really. You put up that caption of the team, and I was looking at it and thinking, who in that team is having a good season? Only the goalkeeper, as far as I could concerned, De Gea, Cristiano Ronaldo, off and on, yes. The others, really, all underperforming against what you'd expect. And another point really is, yes, a clear out's needed, but who now wants to go to Manchester United? People would have walked on broken glass to go there when Sir Alex Ferguson was there. Now they might be in the European Conference League, or maybe not even in Europe at all, if Wolves overtake them and they end up finishing eighth.
Don't worry, UEFA will deal with it with historical achievements in the coming season.
Yeah, it'll be all right.
These guys will be on Extra Time with us, Jules, Frank, Ian and Shaka. You can always keep up to date with Extra Time by subscribing to our YouTube page.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the Estadio Ciudad de Valencia. Barcelona hoping to leapfrog their way back into second place tonight, but the Xavi revolution continues. The referee has a long think about it and points to the penalty spot. Pressure on the shoulders of Morales and Levante, a humbling Barcelona. Linked in towards Vezo, Roger gets ahead on the ball. He's pointed the penalty spot again.
It's not the same player, it's Roger who's going to take this.
Save from Ter Stegen, an escape for Barcelona to Dembele. Good ball from Dembele, Barca are back.
I know well Usman, I know when he's going on the right side. I just have to be ready, and I was prepared, and I had scored that goal, so I was happy to score.
Only as far as Gavi. Oh, Gavi weaves his way, fantastic footwork. Oh, the kids have done it. Gavi creates, Pedri scores. Two teenage tearaways. Little drop of the shoulder here from Dani Gomez. Inside or out. A third penalty of the night. Big moment. Gonzalo Melero is the third penalty taker of the night. Slams it home. 2-2. Opposition. Bordeaux! He's done it again. He is turning into a cult hero.
I had this little short connection with Jordi Alba before the goal. He said, the next ball I get, go first post. And I just went to the first post and he gave it perfectly and I had it in.
Luke de Jong emerges as a match-winning hero.
What a wild win it was for Barcelona over Levante. Epic, say the Catalan Sports Daily Sport. Looking back on that performance, a performance where Levante had three penalties, yet Barcelona still came out with all 3 points at the death, thanks to that late goal from Luke de Jong. Now Barcelona are in second, 12 points back of Real Madrid, but they do have a game in hand. Real Madrid are playing Sevilla on Sunday, and we do have back with us our team to talk about everything we're seeing, Ian, Frank and Jules. And I'll start with Ian. Ian, the voice on our coverage for La Liga. And I think I'll probably ask you this every single week, Ian, until the distance is actually not achievable. Could there be a title race on if Real Madrid lose at the weekend and Barcelona win?
Well, there is a title race on if that actually happens, but will it happen? I'm not convinced that Sevilla are going to beat Real Madrid. Sevilla seem to be the draw specialists, and they seem to have gone off the boil a little bit with that West Ham defeat as well in the Europa League. So, no, I think the gap's too big, if I'm honest with you, really, with so short a time to go in the season. It's a pity there's not another Clásico, mind you, from a neutral perspective, just to spice it up a little bit more. But, you know, Barcelona have made a heck of a run, haven't they?
They really have. They really have. And Jules, I'd like to talk to you because one player that we've seen with a real renewed vitality in his play is Ousmane Dembele. We just heard Aubameyang talking about him there. We know the connection that the two of them have. Ousmane Dembele is actually level on Karim Benzema with 11 assists this season. His contract situation with Barcelona is ongoing and reported to be entering the key stages. What can you tell us about what you know on that situation?
Oh, well, we can tell our viewers that they are talking, Ousmane Dembele's agent, Moussa Sissoko, and the club, that door is not closed by any means. It doesn't mean that he will stay and he will renew his contract and stay for the next few years, but certainly that door is still open. It's still open. I think Xavi especially really wants Dembele to stay. I think Dembele is happy in Barcelona right now. Why would not he be happy? He's a key player in that team. One of his best friends is playing with him now. Clearly the injuries are behind him, and it's almost like two seasons now where things have been much better. Also in his discipline off the pitch, which I think is very important. I think if he continues like this, he could make the France World Cup as well, the France World Cup squad, sorry, which I think would make him really happy. So why would he not stay? But because he's out of contract in June, of course he's going to listen to other offers, other clubs. And the fact that other clubs like PSG, like English clubs, are also keen, because if you can get him without a transfer fee, even if he asks for a lot of money in wages and in commissions, it's still a very interesting deal to be made. Because, and we've said it many times, the talent has never been an issue. He's always had so much talent. I mean, Frank and I saw him when he was 17 and starting at Rennes, when nobody knew him. And already you just had to watch 5 minutes and you knew he was special. The problem was his consistency using this talent. And now that with Xavi, you could see how more mature he is in the way he plays. Now that consistency is there. So of course other big clubs will be also looking and talking to him. I really think that everything is possible, that it's really open. I think he can definitely stay at Barcelona. Not on his terms, because he's asking for too much money for the club right now. But maybe if they find a way of meeting in the middle, I think he can well stay at the club.
Frank, if you were advising Dembele on his future, what would you tell him to do?
Well, I would say that in terms of football, I would say make sure that the consistency stays in your legs and you can prove to the world that you are one of the best players in the world. Because I think he could be, and he could be showed to the world that he really is. After that, I think he needs something. He owes something to Barcelona. Barcelona bet on him. It was disappointing in a way. I think he's in a fantastic club. Yes, there is the money in life, but there is not only the money. There is also the pride, what you do with that, the professionalism that you have to show to the club. And the consistency, again, that you have to show on to the club, because the money they paid for you and the wage that they give to you. So because of the disappointment overall of his years of contract with Barcelona, if he has a chance to stay at the club, even if he has to make an effort, I think it's only human to think that it would be very nice for him to stay and show what he's capable of for many years with Barcelona.
Well, his good friend Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang is publicly pushing for him to stay. And let's talk about Aubameyang, because we know that his former club, Arsenal, have registered back-to-back losses in the Premier League. They're struggling to get those goals. And I'd like to ask you, Shaka, if letting him go was a mistake by Arteta or not, because they could certainly use those goals at the moment.
Well, they could use those goals if he was going to score them for Arsenal. When the decision was made to let Aubameyang go, I thought it was the right decision, and I stand by that. And I said then that I think it'd be a win-win-win. Win for Arsenal, win for Barcelona, win for Aubameyang. And I'm still convinced that that is true. That as good as Aubameyang has been for Barcelona, he needed that move. Barcelona needed that striker. They couldn't rely on Luke de Jong as they were at the time. Great to have Luke de Jong come off the bench, as we saw on the weekend. Arsenal were a table... mid-table, just about, when Aubameyang left. And now, all of a sudden, they're in a conversation for a top-four race. Now, whether they miss out or not, we'll see in the next few weeks. But the fact that they're in the conversation, I think, has to do with there being a more subtle dressing room without Aubameyang, with Arteta having the authority over everybody he's in charge of, and the team responding. So... You take it for what it is. Given where they were to where they are now, I think it's an improvement. I think you take it and you don't look back with any kind of regret.
So Arteta isn't looking longingly over in Spain, Ian, at his former player?
No, I don't think he is. I mean, they'd fallen out. It's pretty clear. He was a long way the wrong side of the tracks by the time he'd finished at Arsenal. I mean, the fact was he wasn't scoring for Arsenal and he wasn't performing for Arsenal. He's turned up late for training. He'd lost the captaincy. He'd been basically excommunicated. So he needed the move. It's just as Shaka said, he needed the move to fire him up again. And of course, he's now the player we saw earlier on in his career, even earlier on in his Arsenal career, when he was scoring those goals in the FA Cup semi-finals and final to help win the competition. I don't know quite where it went wrong. He got a very lucrative contract on the back of that. seemed to switch off a bit after that. So it was the right move. I don't think Arteta made a mistake. He had to make a statement. He sent out a message to the rest of the squad about the discipline and the standards that he expected. And maybe there'll be a long-term payoff for that, even though it doesn't look like it in the last couple of matches. Let's see about what happens in that top four race.
What do you think about it, Frank? Do you think it has proved to be the right decision for all parties involved?
Yes, exactly. I think it's a win-win situation for everybody. And as Ian said, and Xhaka said too, well, it was a time for Pierre-Emerick to leave and to prove that he just needed a new cycle to show his talent. And for Arsenal, I mean, it's not because Pierre-Emerick left that they lost the two last game. It's more because they are missing some players like Thomas Partey yesterday or the day before in the Premier League. And it's also because Arsenal were winning games when Aubameyang just left. So there is nothing to do anymore about that. It's part of the past, and everybody has to be happy with the situation, and everything goes well.
Speaking of goals, especially over the weekend, Jules, should Arsenal have had a goal that was disallowed? Here is the moment of Gabriel Martinelli. This goal was ruled for offside. Jules, we'll let you tell us more.
Thought it was stood. It should have stood simply because the rule is pretty clear. If it's a clear and obvious mistake by the referee, then you can turn it over. I don't think this was an obvious mistake to allow the goal in the first place. I mean, it took them 7 minutes, I think, to put the lines in the right place to see if it was a millimeter onside or offside. And even with the lines, I was not even convinced that was actually precise enough to say, oh yeah, Martinelli was definitely offside there. So I thought Arsenal were a bit unlucky. I mean, they took the decision and now we have to accept it, of course. But I really thought the goal was stood, and I think that changes obviously the dynamic of the game. If you go back half-time 1-1 instead of 1-0 down, it's a completely different second half, of course. I thought that was a bit tough for Arsenal to take.
Ian, what do you think of this, the fact it did take so long to decide what to do about this goal?
Yeah, I don't know why it takes so long. I mean, VAR should be working far more efficiently than that. I mean, Arsenal can moan about that, but really, it was a poor performance by them. They only really turned up in the last 5 minutes of the game, it seemed to me, there. And Brighton did deserve their win. Surprise win for Brighton and Hove Albion, and a big shock for Arsenal. Was that the right decision to play Xhaka at left back? Because he was already without Partey in his midfield. He switched to a 4-3-3 and it didn't work.
A lot more talk about the Premier League over on our YouTube page. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe and keep up to date with all that's going on in world football. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Champions League is back this week, and tomorrow it's the quarterfinal second leg between Real Madrid and Chelsea. Real Madrid 3-1 up and now hoping to see it out at the Bernabeu. Remember that Tuchel said it was over after the game last week. I mean, it seems he's changed his mind all of a sudden. He's now saying we've got a real chance.
Well, what a difference one result will make.
What a difference a big 6-0 victory at the weekend will make. Don't dream it's over. Tuchel wants to play fantasy football. Just taking a look. I have a dream. Oh, it looks as though they are believing now, and it has been a change in the tune of Thomas Tuchel. What do you think about it all, Frank? Can Chelsea turn things around at the Santiago Bernabeu?
Of course they can, because the away goal doesn't count anymore, and I don't see why it's not possible for Chelsea to win 2-0 or go to extra time and even win 3-0 against Real Madrid, when I saw Barcelona being able to win 4-0 against Real Madrid. So I find you pretty unfair with Mr. Tuchel. I think he said that Chelsea couldn't win if they played the same way. No. He said that they couldn't win if they played the same way. I think Jules and Ian could confirm that. And I'm pretty sure that I Have a Dream say is not coming from him. I think somebody very famous said that before. But
me too.
But really,
a lot more famous than Tuchel.
Yeah, but I really. Yeah, for sure. But I really think it's possible. Yeah, I think even Real Madrid players, they know that. I think they're going to, I don't know how Ancelotti is going to play, you know, if he's going to play defensively. But they really know that the beginning of the game is going to be crucial, and the beginning of the second half is going to be crucial. If they concede a goal very quickly, they're going to feel in danger, and they're going to start shaking maybe and be fragile. So it's not done yet. Of course, they have Real Madrid has a huge advantage, but it's not done yet. It has to be played.
Yeah, obviously, with that big result at the weekend, Ian, and the fact that they eliminated them, Chelsea eliminated Real Madrid last season, they must have that belief they can do so. What are your thoughts on it all?
Yeah, I think that they'll have the belief, but it would be a sensational result now. I think Real Madrid, 3-1 up, away from home. Benzema terrorised the Chelsea defence. Chelsea didn't look themselves at all last week. They'd just come off that 4-1 home defeat against Brentford. I think that was still in their system somehow. They're a much, much better side than that. They've probably got their mojo back at the weekend. I can see this Chelsea making it a bit scary for Real Madrid, but I still think Real will get it done.
All right, well, there's a big game I'd like to talk to you about elsewhere in the Champions League. Atleti against Manchester City. Manchester City taking a 1-0 lead into this one. Stefan Savic said 1-0 is not bad because when the team get here to the Wanda Metropolitano, things are going to be different. Meanwhile, Pep Guardiola has said we are going there to try and score and to try and win again. Now, you know both of these teams well, Ian. What are you expecting in this tie?
It's going to be a rare old atmosphere, isn't it, there? And, you know, it's going to be a real fight, I think, for Manchester City. But maybe they've got Atletico where they want them, because at some point, Atletico have got to come out to play to pull that tie around. I mean, Manchester City always score, don't they? And I think they're going to score in this game. I think they might go through with a little bit to spare, actually.
Then you take a look, Jules, at what we saw in the last couple of games, that game against City from Atleti, that game against Mallorca at the weekend. Can they really have any hope that they can get a result here?
I personally don't think so. I'm that 5-5-0 still give me nightmares at night. I wake up and I'm like, what, really? You play 5-5-0? What's going on? With that squad, I mean, what's going on? Come on. And at Mallorca at the weekend, they were terrible. Even when they had the ball, even when they were trying to play, I just don't think they... And again, I don't think you can switch it on. It's not you go at the Etihad and you think, you know what, let's go back to our old self and you play the 5-5-0. And then next week, we're going to turn it on and we're going to play attacking football and we're going to attack a bit more. That's not going to happen. And Ian is right. As soon as they start to attack, City are going to say, come on now, here you come. And then they're going to hit them, and they're going to hit them hard. Savic can say whatever he wants. He's different at the Wanda, he's this, he's that. Really? Is it going to be different? City will have the ball, and I don't even know how Atleti can hurt them. Yeah, you can try on the counter, but Griezmann is not the player that he was 5 years ago on the counter. Joao Felix can't do it on his own. I mean, come on, the guy is really good lately, but even on his own, he can't do it. We saw that in the first leg. I want a good game. I want to enjoy the game and watch it, and actually Atleti do something good, and we have a bit of suspense, and it's thrilling, and all of that. But I'm really struggling thinking about the game, how that would be possible.
So definitely not the highest of hopes, it seems, from the panel in comebacks in those two games. But what about this one? It's Bayern against Villarreal. Villarreal with the 1-0 lead after the first leg. And now this one goes back to Munich, back to the Allianz Arena. What are your thoughts on it, Jules?
Well, I thought it was quite fascinating to listen to Julian Nagelsmann today and Manuel Neuer in the press conference, because they just destroyed Villarreal, saying, oh, yeah, you... you beat us, but now we're here in Munich and basically you have no chance and we're going to destroy you. I think it'd be tougher than that because I think Villarreal can also defend well, and that 4-4-2 is tricky at times to play against because they're so compact and they don't give you much and they really fight for each other. And I think Unai Emery deserves a lot of credit for the tactical ability of this team, and when they play well, we saw that in the first leg, but also for their resilience at times. They can defend really well. But you would expect Bayern to now go and win it. The big regret really for Villarreal is to have only scored once in the first leg, because they could easily have won 3-0 and the game would not be over, but it would be almost over. Now with just a 1-0 advantage going to Munich, and you know that Bayern will try to do what they did to Salzburg when they struggled in that first leg and then just blistered them in the second leg, and it could easily be like that. I think it would be tighter than the Salzburg second leg, but you would expect Bayern to still go through.
Let me get you on the record then, Xhaka, for both of these games on Tuesday. Bayern against Villarreal. What's going to happen? Who's going to go through?
I think Bayern are going to win 3-0. I do feel for Villarreal because I thought they were outstanding in the first leg. Should have won 3 or 4. But when you come up against teams like Bayern Munich, on and off day, you have to make it count. And though they got the win, it wasn't by anywhere near as wide as it should have been or they needed to be to overcome Bayern at the Allianz.
And can Tuchel have a dream, or should he dream on?
No, listen, I totally understand exactly what Tuchel is saying. I said it after the first leg when in the post-game press conference when he said this, we can't beat Real Madrid. I felt it was a statement born out of frustration of seeing a decidedly poor Chelsea against Real Madrid and even worse Chelsea against Brentford. And I said then that what I felt he was saying is this version that we've been over the last couple of weeks cannot get the better of Real Madrid at the Bernabeu. But what you saw at Southampton was a totally different side. And now they're playing with pace, now they're playing with confidence. And as Frank said, you only have to score 2. I think you go into that game thinking you can score 2 and get yourself back into this. An early goal changes all that. You concede an early goal and you've got it all to do. Let's also remember that Real Madrid have not been great lately themselves either. Probably their best 90 minutes of football was at Stamford Bridge. Even against PSG, they dominated for 30 minutes of the 3 hours of football. So you take all that into consideration and you have a chance. It's a big ask, but I think Chelsea and with a manager like Tuchel can do it. I still think that Real Madrid hold on. But if I'm sitting in that dressing room, I'm quietly confident.
Well, what a game we hope it's going to be to look back on. It does sound as though he's actually trying to go for Chelsea there, doesn't it? We'll definitely remind him of it, whatever does happen. Make sure you join us tomorrow. There will be a lot more talk looking back on both of those ties on tomorrow's ESPN FC.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
ESPN Plus is your home for the Bundesliga, packed schedule and all games available across Saturday and Sunday coming up on the weekend. But there's been a lot of talk today about Robert Lewandowski agreeing to switch Bayern for Barcelona. What's it all about, Jules? Tell us more.
Well, we know that his agent, Pini Zahavi, who's one of the super agents, really very, very well connected, he's looking for clubs, for offers, for Lewandowski. He's been in touch with a lot of clubs, including, of course, Barcelona, but PSG as well, in England too. And just testing the water, testing the market. We know that there's probably an agreement in place, or very close to an agreement in place, between Zahavi, Lewandowski and Barcelona. The thing is, Lewandowski hasn't said anything to the Bayern Munich hierarchy, Oliver Kahn, Salihamidzic, all those people in charge at the club. He hasn't said, I want to go. We know that he's out of contract, obviously, in June 2023, so only 1 year after this season left on his contract. So it will be a key summer. It's either you extend his deal or you try to sell him in the summer, and I guess his value is still quite high considering how great he still is, despite being 33 years old, or you keep him for another season and you know that he will leave for free then at the end of the 23 season. So it's very interesting. You see why he's... All those rumors are coming out now because obviously he's in Lewandowski's and Zahavi's interest to do that, to pull all those things out, to leak all those talks and all those things. I think Bayern should remain calm for now and try to find, obviously according to what they want to do with him, the best solution. The best solution might be to sell him if they think that's right, but who do you replace him with if you're Bayern? If you can't get Haaland, then I think he becomes quite tricky. You keep him and let him go on a free, you extend him, but obviously again, at that age, How long will be the new contract? You give him a three-year deal. That's a long time for a 33-year-old, even at that kind of form. So it'll be very interesting to see what the next few weeks hold for them.
Well, let's talk about another superstar footballer who's been in the rumours, not just today, but pretty much all year and the year before that. Kylian Mbappe, brilliant performance from him at the weekend. That means the rumours have intensified as to what his future holds for him. And we've even seen the figure, 200 million, bandied about. And it doesn't even matter what currency that's in, does it? For PSG to try and keep him staying. What's the latest here?
Well, the latest is that he says he hasn't made his mind up yet. He hasn't decided, and I want to believe him. I was told that was true as well. Some people maybe think that he already knows and he just doesn't say it, and maybe that's true. But I really want to believe him when he says he doesn't know yet. The thing is, PSG are trying everything. I mean, literally, if he was asking for some goats for his garden, they would send some goats from, I don't know where you find goats, but like, you know, sheep from Wales or what. They would fly literally anything. Being captain, no problem. Image rights, no problem. Huge contract, and we know the signing on fee is 100 million euros, no problem. Building an even more, I was going to say, a better squad, you know, competing squad with the likes of Tchouameni, Pogba, whoever they want. They're telling him this is what we're going to do. It's going to be great. He's going to please stay with us just one more season. I'm not sure how much of an impact that has on his thinking, but that's what PSG are trying. And Real Madrid camp, we're staying quite cool. They know that it's his dream at some point to play at the Bernabeu. Remember the scenes when he turned up the day before the last 16 second leg and he was warming up there, training, and he was looking around. He looked like a kid in a sweet shop, and that's what he was. So they know that eventually at some point he will play there. Will he be this summer, the following one? I really don't think he knows himself yet.
I mean, we know that he has the dream, Shaka, to go to Real Madrid. That's what everybody's saying. But does money talk when it is figures being bandied about like that?
With those kind of figures, absolutely. Listen, I let me just say off the bat, I don't know how this makes any kind of sense to be splashing that kind of cash. And I don't know, it's just rumour and speculation. We're not sure what to make of it. But at that kind of money, it's absolutely ridiculous. And as much as it's his dream to play for Real Madrid, he's young enough that this sets up the Mbappe family for generations. Let's be honest about that too. And he can still pursue that dream when the time comes, whenever that may be. But I do not know how you turn your back on that kind of money, regardless.
Ian, where would you like to see Kylian Mbappe playing his football next season?
Well, our pal Jules' superior contacts here, he knows the inside track on this player. But I've got the feeling that it feels like it's a bit of a done deal for him to go to Real Madrid. He wants to go there. They want to take him there. I think they're going to look after him pretty well financially. They may not be able to match the petrodollars coming at him at Paris Saint-Germain. But if I was taking a guess, I'd say he'll be playing for Real Madrid next season.
Frank, your role today on ESPN FC is advisor to young French players. This time we're asking you, if you're advising Kylian Mbappe on his future, what would you tell him to do?
To not listen to us, to not listen to anybody, to just listen to what he really feels inside his heart and go for it. If he wants to go to Real Madrid because he wants to achieve something, because it's a dream from his childhood, you know, go for it. But if it's about money, if it's about maybe challenge of building something around him at Paris Saint-Germain, stay at Paris Saint-Germain. Qatar is capable, and Paris Saint-Germain board is they're capable of giving you everything you need to create a fantastic team around you. And you're going to get what? You're going to get crazy money like nobody had before because they can afford it. It's up to him. It's really up to him. I think nobody should interfere. Nobody should judge him because that's his life and that's his choice. And he deserves to have that choice. And I will be happy for him if he's just happy for himself. And hopefully he's not going to have any pressure from anybody. And we'll see what's going to happen very soon.
Well, that's not very helpful advice today.
Get the
Frank,
goats. That's
you
what Frank would say. Get the goats, Kilian.
Get the goats. There'll be a lot more transfer talk over on our website. Make sure to check out ESPN.com and you'll see all the latest transfer news over on ESPN FC. Well, that's all we've got time for on the latest edition of the show, but we've had fun. We want to keep it going. So the crew will be back to answer your questions on Extra Time. Stick around. All right, welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Shaka is here with me in the studio. We also have Jules, Frank and Ian as well. But we'd like to start by saying congratulations to Don Hutchison and his lovely lady, Nicola. Oh. This is baby Miller Paul Hutchison, born today. And well it is done. Great to see.
Oh, well done, Don. Well, job well done by Don Hutchison.
Well done.
Absolutely gorgeous stuff. And mummy is doing well, so is baby too. A 7 pounds and 11 ounces. Welcome to the world, baby Miller. All right, first question is for you, Shaka, and it's actually about kids.
Oh, goodness.
It says, Shaka, I am the oldest child of 5 kids.
Okay.
My mum always remembers all our birthdays, but my dad, not so much. You know all your kids' birthdays.
Yes, I do. I do know what my kids' birthdays. Do you want me to reel them up?
I mean, we wouldn't even know if you were telling the truth.
That's very true. That's very true. But no, I still remember all of their birthdays because I still have to pay for all of their birthdays. So, yes.
He definitely remembers all of their birthdays. Okay, so dad points for you there. All right, this was something that came up on yesterday's show. Stevie was trying to confuse us all.
As he does.
Because the question was buy, sell or bench. And then Gab Marcotti said, well, how do you know if you could buy them, what team they were on in the beginning? So we were saying, what should it be? But I'll try it with you, Frank, anyway. And then if it doesn't work out for you, we can give you the other option.
Why is Gab confusing everything so much now?
Buy, sell or bench. Henri, Benzema or Mbappe.
Oh, no. Oh, my word.
Oh, yeah, that would be an insult for the ones going to be benched. I go for Mbappe. Oh my God, that's so unfair.
Should we do it the way that we were saying it should be? Start, bench, or drop?
Yeah. Let's do start, bench, drop.
They're all on your team already. Who do you start?
Yes.
Who's your substitute?
Yeah.
And who's dropped altogether from the squad? And they're all fit and they're all in their prime.
Okay. I start with... Benzema. Who's that? What's the second? You start?
Mbappe and Henry.
You can. One's a substitute,
start,
one starts,
bench, drop.
And one's out of the squad altogether.
Okay. Let's say Benzema, Mbappe, and I drop Henry because they're gonna put the tiredness of the other player, and Mbappe's gonna finish the job.
Oh, man. I think we should let Jules in on this.
No, don't. Don't. It's fine. I didn't hear the question.
Jules pleaded the fifth. I didn't know that was an option. I plead the fifth.
Is that what you're doing, Jules?
Yeah, me too. I plead the fifth.
All right. This is an American show. All right.
Can I say a story, Kate? Can I just say a story? Today I was at the gym. And there was a guy who came and started to speak English to me. And you know, as French, we like to brag a little bit, you know, because I'm maybe the only one in my gym who can speak English. So I was speaking English with a guy. And the guy said he was coming from Trinidad and Tobago.
I said, really?
Wow, unbelievable. Yes. And I said, well, you must know the most famous guy in Trinidad and Tobago, Shaka Hislop. And he looked at me and said,
who? Hang on a minute. Who else is he going to the gym with?
I said, no. I met him there. And I said, are you kidding me?
No, you also Shaka going to Hislop. The gym with the Aubameyang's dad?
Yes, that's right.
Yes, true. That's a very famous gym, I guess. But the guy suddenly realized, yes, Shaka Hislop, the goalkeeper. Of course I know him. He said, of course you know him. If you don't know him, you're not from Trinidad and Tobago. Are you crazy or what? And I kicked him out of my dressing room.
All right, I'm going to come to your gym, Frank. That's what it is.
Ian, what were you saying about the start bench or drop?
Well, you didn't mention their current ages, so I'll be starting Mbappe because he terrorises every defence. I think in this game, Benzema would have to be a sub, unfortunately, although he's in prime form. I'd have to sell Henri because he's probably about 52 now.
But we said it, they're all in their prime.
He said prime.
They're all
he
in their
said
prime.
In their prime.
Yeah. Yeah.
Prime.
Prime.
You don't get off that easy.
Yeah, Ian.
You can play the 50
that
if
that
you
would
want.
That would be too easy. Would be too easy, Jan. Come on, I would have done that
he's
answer.
Best not to get involved. All right. Would Shaka ever make the mistake against Benzema by Ulreich, Karius, Donnarumma, and Mundy? Would Shaka ever make the mistake made against Benzema by these following goalkeepers?
Okay, Karius in the previous Champions League final. That was an odd one. Donnarumma, no, because I never tried to pass the ball to anybody. I just launched it as soon as it came anywhere close to me. And who's the third one?
Mundy.
And Mendy.
Mendy.
Again, that's too far outside my box. I never ran that far in my life.
All right.
So no is the short answer.
No.
That's too far.
Shaka doesn't make mistakes.
Not that I don't make mistakes. I don't pass the ball out from the back. And I don't go running up my box. It's a long way back, I found. Did it once. It's a long way back. So I just stayed on my goal line as best I could.
Would you like to test yourself against Benzema?
No, thank you. I'm very good right here.
I like all the no thank yous when it comes to French players.
I don't want to get involved
in that one. Jules, at the end of the summer, you were celebrating the greatest transfer window in history. So far, how do you evaluate each of the signings? It feels that other than fullbacks, all have been disappointments.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think Hakimi and Nuno Mendes have been good, I've been really good at times. I've been more average like the rest of the team. I think even if they're very talented and very good, they also, their form will drop when the team is not playing well. I think Donnarumma has been good at times, really good, and he's been disappointing. We're not going to go back again on that game against Real Madrid, of course. We were in disagreement with Shaka and the goal against North Macedonia as well, but that's not with PSG. Sergio Ramos, I don't know what to say. I mean, he's played 7 games, I think, on his three starts in the league, but he's unbeaten. Hey, I mean, unbeaten on 7 games. I think I could be unbeaten on 7 games. Wijnaldum is a mystery. I don't understand. I would want to believe that the problem with Wijnaldum is more the lack of structure around him in the team, because the midfield especially has been a bit of a shambles all season. Leo Messi, if you look really at the stats, it's not a bad season. He's more of a creator now, but we've explained that, than a finisher. He will never score again 92 goals a calendar year. Never, that's never going to happen again. He's not even going to score 30 or 35 anymore. He's more of a creator now and a passer than a goal scorer, than a finisher like before. Of course, he will still score goals, but nowhere near as many as he used to, whatever club he's at, whatever league he's in. However, in terms of creativity, and we saw that again at the weekend with the 3 assists, like he did earlier in the season, that is still very much there. The intelligence, the vista, the vision, the scanning, all of that is very much there. So I think it's a bit harsh on Messi when we said that he's not having a good season. But yeah, overall, we all expected more from them 6 than what we've had so far in the season.
All right. Ian, is there a commentators union?
because you're not getting away with this one. For Ian, no. Commentary edition.
Of course
we should. Oh, pretty fifth, Ian.
Commentary edition of start, bench or drop. Peter Drury, John Champion and Martin Tyler.
I'm definitely.
Correct question.
I'm going to walk into meet and media rooms and meet these guys. So, look, they're all in the team. They're all wonderful
And they all have their prime.
I'll play with 13. I'm not dropping anybody. I'm going to play with extra players. Oh, goodness.
Would any of you lot care to wade in?
No, thank you.
No, Jules, Frank? Mm-mm. Any preferences on your commentators here? Obviously, these all coming after Ian Dark.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
They all have their prime. We want to know if they all have their prime. That's what it is. You know?
Their voices are in, their vocal cords are perfect that day. Yeah, see, everybody's avoiding it.
Yep, with good reason.
Yeah, next question.
All right. Jules, who has been a better signing this season? Luke de Jong, who's won Barca 8 points this season, or Romelu Lukaku?
So I've decided today to upgrade Bad de Jong and to bring him back to a normal de Jong. He's still not as good as the other de Jong, the good one. But I have to say, we were mean with him. Well, we were mean. I think we were quite realistic with him. But now, like you said, he's been this super sub. Scoring. Yeah, Gab was always in agreement. He didn't say it, but I could tell. And so are you, by the way. So, Bad de Jong is back to normal de Jong. That's fair. And when it comes down to Lukaku, where do we start? In terms of talent, we have to say Lukaku is more talented than Luke de Jong. No offense, normal de Jong. But it's such a nightmare. When you think about it, it all started so well with that game away at Arsenal, that goal. He looks so strong, Romelu. He looks so happy. He came and spoke to me for French television straight after the Arsenal game, and he was really buzzing. He was really buzzing. And from that day to what's happening now, when he's not even in the squad tomorrow, okay, he might be a little bit injured. I don't know if the injury is real or if it's more in his head, but he's going to miss that second leg against Real Madrid. The contrast is so big. I mean, I don't even know how it get that bad. But right now, I mean, normal de Jong is playing and scoring. Lukaku is not playing and not scoring. So I guess normal de Jong maybe just about wins this one.
Normal de Jong.
I was thinking the same thing.
I was listening to the Gabba Jules podcast today, and I know you were pulled up on that one. I wonder if you'll still say Ronald Koeman.
Who?
Will you?
Are you mean the best guy? Yeah, he's coming back soon to the national team.
All right. Shaka, when a player makes a mistake, tactical or a howler, in a game, will a manager bring that up in front of the whole squad during a post-match analysis, or will it be talked about individually to spare the player's blushes?
Sometimes it's brought up in the dressing room in front of everyone. That's not a problem for players. Getting kind of that dressing down in the dressing room from everybody else, in front of everybody else, is not a problem. It's part of post-game team talks. Now, saying that, the manager may leave it, you know, depending on the circumstance, leave it to have a discussion one-on-one on Monday. But if you have a howler, more chance than not, you're going to hear about it. That's not the issue. You just don't want him going to the press and saying that, and giving the press that ammo to come at you. But in the dressing room, that happens, I'll say, every single game if there's a big enough mistake.
Tashmir's back in. I was caught out by your first question just momentarily, so let's hope I get this one a bit better. That was the goalkeeper question before. How much would Frank's book help Chelsea in Mission Impossible tomorrow? Which player particularly needs to read it, Frank?
Everybody in the world should read my book.
Everybody in the world needs Frank's book.
Frank, if you want to, you've sat on the fence too much today.
If you want to be successful, if you want to be happy, you have to read my book. It's full of optimism and believe in yourself. You know, believe in yourself and you're going to win. The problem is if Real Madrid players read my book and Chelsea players read my book, it's becoming difficult to see if somebody can win the game.
For Jules, Ian and Shaka, are you guys following the IPL? If so, any particular teams you are rooting for?
Short answer for me, no.
No.
No? Jules?
No, I'm following the cricket team, and that is a very depressing experience.
Now,
next question, Kate. That was very interesting.
We've got the wrong panel tonight. These questions are great. And the panelists are just
amazing. Are you following IPL?
My name isn't on it. My name is.
No, that wasn't the question. I'm asking you,
Kate
Murray.
Neither is Frank, so we don't
have to follow. Are you following the IPL?
Not today.
She's reading my book. She hasn't got the time for that. She reads my book.
I'll read it tonight. I've watched your films, some of them. I just need to go home and read the book. All right. Ian. What's more exciting to be doing live commentary from? A World Cup final or a heavyweight championship fight in Las Vegas?
Ooh. Oh, I'd have to say a World Cup final. For certain, you can't beat the World Cup. And to do the final is just a privilege, really. I've done a few World Heavyweight Championship fights. Some have been a lot better than others. They're usually extremely dramatic. But football's my first love, so that's an easy one. World Cup final.
Oh. But when it comes to boxing, Ian, what's the best match you ever commentated on?
Marvin Hagler against Tommy Hearns. I'm aging myself a bit here, but that was a fantastic World Middleweight Championship fight in Las Vegas in the 80s. And if you're a boxing fan and you're watching this, get out the tape or get it on YouTube of the very first round of that. You won't see a more exciting round of boxing anywhere, anytime, any place.
There you go. That is a classic.
Jules wouldn't know. Jules was telling us he was born in 95 or something like that.
Jules definitely wasn't aging himself today. He let us all know that he wasn't around.
I wasn't born in 1970. Oh, goodness me.
Me neither, Jules.
Oh, being yourself. I wasn't born in the 70s either. Just saying.
Or the 80s. Or the 90s.
All I said is I wasn't born in the 70s. That's all I said. Move on. Let's move on.
That will do it for the latest edition. Seeing as though the panelists don't really want to answer many of your questions today. Hopefully they'll do better tomorrow. Join us then.